Hello and welcome to another episode of Economics, the economics podcast from Economist. This is Tariq, joining you along with Jayant.
Hey guys, what's happening?
And what's happening, Jayant, is that we are two Liverpool fans recording this episode literally hours after Liverpool were confirmed to be crowned Premier League champions 2019-20. First ever Premier League title for this club, which last won the English top flight title in 1990. 30 long years since this has happened. Back then, the English top flight was just the English top flight or the first division. It rebranded or reformed as the Premier League in 1992, of course. And since then, Liverpool had not won it. I've been following Liverpool almost 25 years now. And this is the first time, at least I have followed them, that they have won the league title. I'm guessing it's the same story for you.
Yes, I mean, Liverpool always was my favorite when it comes to EPL. Rather, it was, I followed two clubs, Madrid being my first choice. But Liverpool, I always had this soft corner, but it was rather more emotional day for me when I saw the news on my phone in the midnight. I mean, I almost had tears in my eyes. I mean, that's how emotional you are. I mean, winning a title was nothing, I mean, nothing less of a miracle for us, although we well deserved things, but we waited so long for that to come home.
And of course, if long-time listeners are wondering if this podcast has turned into a football podcast, certainly that's not the case here. We are still going to bring you an economics podcast. But in the light of what happened with Liverpool, we want to talk about lessons that we can draw in terms of economics from this experience, and not just from the point of view of these analogies about, let's say, how inspirational it is, or what can it do for the city of Liverpool, and how impressive this team has been, which are things we will talk about. But the fact that this is a team that had to be revived to get it to this point where it could finally start dominating again. And the last 3 years have been incredible under Jurgen Klopp. Klopp joined in 2015, of course, a little more than four and a half years now. It took some time to rebuild the team, and the team itself took some time to hit its stride. Here we are with them raising a record season. They wrapped up the league with 7 games still left today, 7 rounds of matches. Never has happened. Yeah. The history of the first division that the title has been sealed this early. That just tells you how dominant they have been, that other teams have been left behind in the dust. I mean, Usain Bolt has run a few fast races in his life, but you know, this has been almost that kind of a margin. So Jayant, run us through the heartbreaks that we have had, and Liverpool's history over the last 15 years or so, with especially when it comes to the Premier League.
Well, I mean, I think season 8-9, I suppose, we almost were leading till Christmas, and shit hit the fan, or we reverted to mean up post Christmas when we never recovered, and we thought we had the season in the bag, but we never came back. And the other thing was, of course, when everyone else blamed Gerrard for it, but I still feel that there were other faulty things which we did in that season. I think season 14-15.
That was 2013 and 2014. Yes. 14, basically, for anybody who's wondering what all the football talk is about, really talking about the English league here, 20 teams set up, and you have to play every team once home and once away. So that means 38 games across a season, and basically whoever gets the most points wins. And it's a marathon, not a sprint. Liverpool, at least twice or thrice in the last about 15 years or so, have made great starts to seasons, have been at the top of the table. In 2013-14, the start wasn't as great, but it was the middle run that really got them, especially at the start of 2014 and a little later than that when they were at the top of the table. And of course, the Gerrard slip that Dan mentioned is the Gerrard slip happened against Chelsea, a game that Liverpool just had to draw and would still be good enough to win the remaining games and win the title. They lost that game, dropped those 3 points, and that became pretty costly at the end. Though Liverpool also dropped points against Crystal Palace in the next game. So, you know, a lot of other factors. But long story short, it's been a series of misfortunes somehow for Liverpool, and everybody felt that the club was cursed. 30 years, no title, it's not going to happen. We won Champions League titles in between, you know, won titles in Europe, but it's domestic league, the highest honor in a sense, because, you know, a club plays in its league to win the league. And it wasn't. So where does all the economics talk come in here? The economic talks come in when we look at a football club the way we would look at an economy. So simply put, you can think of a football club as a collection of resources, just as an economy is. And the idea is to combine those resources to turn it into an output, a productive kind of an output, just like in an economy, inputs and resources are converted into output for the consumption of the rest of the economy. And the objective is to grow the economy as much as possible so that welfare is spread among all the people. Same is the idea with a football club. Combine those resources, play football, and the outcome you want is that team to win, to do well, and finally deliver something to its fans. So, do you want to explain or expand on the model of why a football club is sort of like an economy?
I mean, simply put it, football club or an economy is a perpetual entity, unlike companies wherein they grow, they go bust, and again, I mean, that's the end of it. Whereas, irrespective of win, lose, your fans are always there. So, same with the country, whether they're doing good or bad, there is a perpetual entity, continuity of the whole series of events. So that is why, it closely matches with the economics of any country in terms of how you run the resources in the club.
Or what do you want to, or what do you want to deliver from out of those resources? And just like there are different ways to run an economy, and there are different ways to grow an economy. You can achieve success in a football club through different ways, and we've seen different football clubs approach different things. We want to talk a little bit about the things that we can learn from Liverpool's approach, but we just want to talk about a few of the other approaches. The basic theories that are there of economic growth and how does economic development happen. So, you know, in his book Economics, the User's Manual, Harjun Chah says that economic development is basically the development of productive capability, the ability to produce output. And how do you get the ability to produce output? You either are blessed with natural resources. That could be a luck thing. There could be teams which could be just simply blessed with great players, maybe from their academy or somewhere. It has been the case. There have been teams which have been successful like that. Or you could... the other theory of growth is that you could simply become more productive by becoming more specialized. So the Adam Smith theory of more specialization. You could maybe hire people from a football club's point of view, people who are specialized for specialist positions, and pair them in those positions and achieve success. So teams have done that as well, but that usually is fairly expensive because at the specialists for the best positions, you need to spend a lot of money. And clubs that you can think of, you are fans of one of them, Real Madrid, who in recent times have had a policy of, they're an extremely successful team, of course, but they're also a team that have had a lot of expensive player signing.
Yes, I mean, talk about buying players, they go and buy players like there's no tomorrow there. I mean,
would you want to run our listeners through at least two or three of the big names here?
Over the years, number of great players they've bought, Luis Figo, which changed my allegiance from Barcelona to Madrid because of one single player which they bought. Then, of course, Ronaldo, then the famous David Beckham, then after that Cristiano. Now there's so many. I mean, there's galaxy full of stars. I mean, you can't.
And we almost did not even mention the French legend that is in it.
The current coach. Yeah. So I mean, that would require one more episode in terms of buying and selling. That's like a side business of Madrid.
But the point being that Madrid are willing to put that much money and, you know, win at all costs. So, you know, that could be one model of economic growth. And there are countries which either have been resource rich or been able to develop these productive capabilities just because they've had that kind of ability. Then. Second way is what we want to talk a little bit more about, which is what we call Solovian growth, or you know, theory given by Robert Solow, who Raghuram Rajan quoted once at a speech in IIT Delhi, I think, where he said that Robert Solow won the Nobel Prize in Economics for work that showed the bulk of economic growth did not come from putting more factors of production, such as labor and capital, to work. So basically, he was saying that, you know, in terms of football clubs, don't just sign and buy the biggest and the best players. He said instead it came from putting together those factors of production more cleverly. So new ideas, new methods of production, better logistics, those would lead to sustained economic growth. Or from a football point of view, maybe sustained success. And that's where the story of Liverpool comes in, or at least this iteration of Liverpool, who have not necessarily gone that route of trying to buy the most specialist players and achieve success, but they have approached it in a slightly smarter fashion. So, Anto, do you want to get us started on how exactly Liverpool's whole model is built?
So, I mean, so like the quote goes from the Moneyball. I mean, at some times they are like the organ donors for the big clubs. But sometimes they themselves are buying out organs out of the other cheaper, smaller clubs where the talents are. So they are ready to spend where the talent they feel fits the whole scheme of things in terms of the strategy. Not necessarily they go out buy the most flashiest player who could single-handedly win the thing. No, that is not the strategy of Liverpool. They're not even chasing players to sell their t-shirts and merch sales. So basically, they want the player whom they buy fit into the whole strategy, and team is what they're trying to build rather than one single star taking them to the next level. So,
that's something we have seen Jurgen Klopp bring in terms of a philosophy, right?
Yes. So basically, he has sold almost 36 to 40 players. Almost around 350 million euros. That's how he's cleaned up the entire thing. And also he has spent where necessary spending had to be done, whether doing areas like defense and goalkeeper. So these are some of the key areas where they thought they could get the best players they've bought, and wherever they thought they can sell. So net to net, we can take example like Liverpool. Put it in economics, they have a trade surplus, which is basically wherever they bought, the value of the players are far more, and they sold also. I mean, they have reinvested those into good players whose value has only increased over the years.
And so if you're keeping track, Liverpool picked up an Andy Robertson, who was playing in the Scottish fourth division at one point of time, you know, was desperately struggling, but he was scouted. And from Hull City, a club that had been promoted to the Premier League, he was signed for Liverpool. And he has turned out to be an outstanding player, one of the biggest contributors, in fact, in the last couple of seasons with his pace on the wing. So they have looked at areas where they needed Klopp's whole vision and strategy to work, and that's the gaps that they have been filling. Like you rightly pointed out, where they have had to develop big bang capabilities, they have done that by investing big money. They bought the most expensive goalkeeper in the world, you were right, Alisson Becker, who has kept 12 clean sheets just this year, this season. And he actually has played 7 fewer games than the other goalkeepers because he was injured for a period of time, I think. So it's astonishing in terms of his ability, and he keeps the team in the game. And of course, they bought one of the most expensive defenders, Virgil van Dijk, who as a centre-back has done outstanding work again. So these are people who have sort of built the pace, or like we are saying, the productive capability that you want to build for the economy to be able to develop and deliver growth. Incidentally, I have a Klopp quote here, which he said, I think it was during his time at Dortmund, where he said, "I have only one understanding of development and making success, and that is going step by step." So this has been a multi-year project, still working on it. It took 2 or 3 years to build it up to what it needed to be, and then is when we are seeing spectacular results, which of course everybody is to see, but lot goes behind the scenes. So, Jayant, in terms of economic counterparts or analogies, could we look at examples of economies who have kind of done that, built their productive capabilities over the years, and then growth has kind of followed?
Something like closer here, you can see someone like Taiwan, where the country was nowhere to be seen in the late 50s, and in terms of the overall growth and the per capita income, in terms of the people of Taiwan, they have only grown from where they are, and this is, we are talking about 45, 50 years, 60 years of growth. Wherever there were hiccups in terms of the thing, they pivoted, then they've invested that in terms of technology and things, and they only grown.
So incidentally, since you bring up Taiwan, incidentally, Taiwan did a pivot from agriculture and food grains, etc., that they're dependent on for most of their trade, and they went into electronics, and they became a behemoth in electronics. Today, actually, that sector drives their economy.
Yes. And somewhere closer example, I don't want to jinx by saying this country name, but still I'll go ahead and tell, because the feat which they have achieved recently is nothing less than a miracle, which is basically Australian economy. For the last 30 years without a recession and growing simply from nowhere to, I mean, the region where they have gone now is like no less than a miracle. So from a commodity economy, they have transferred into a banking, and they at every single point of time, they had a hiccups in when the ASEAN crisis happened, but they pivoted very well. They transferred into a exporting company, then they developed their own domestic market, and we're seeing the capex which they have put in over the years. So the same similar examples are there in terms of commodity-rich countries going boom for some years and going bust after a few cycles. But Australia has managed to grow for 30 years. It's a paradise of growth.
What we are getting at here is that you have different ways of coming at growth. You have different ways of describing or achieving a growth, whether it's, you know, success at a football club or growth in an economy. The blueprint can be different. The eventual destination is the same. With a football club, you want to achieve success, win titles. With an economy, you want to grow as much as possible or increase the quality of life or welfare for people as much as possible, and there is no real one way to do this. There are different ways of doing this, and all of them are kind of valid. For example, you could look at a Manchester City and the kind of success they have had, but a lot of people would say that they have had success because they have spent a lot of money, which is kind of true. They of course have spent a lot of money. They have bought some of the biggest players, and they have some of the most talented players, and of course one of the most talented managers in the world with them. But at the same time, you have got to put all these things together and make them work. So we have had economies like you mentioned, Dan, and that's where we're going to come to at the end of our podcast. Economies which have had resources, which have had abilities, but they have not translated it into performance. You mentioned PSG from the French league as one of those clubs. Most expensive transfer in the world. They bought Neymar for 200 million euros.
Yeah. I mean, domestic success, they dominate like anything, but once they're in UEFA, I mean, they know their real place. Because
the Champions League, that is. Spectacular failures in the Champions League, unfortunately, and that remains one of their, you know, pretty ambitious. They want to become like one of those big European clubs, like a Barcelona, but like a Real Madrid, like a Manchester United, or a Bayern Munich. But this is what is holding them back. So again, in economics terms, Jayant, could you give us a few analogies of that sort?
So basically, when it comes to developing your growth model or a sector or a niche wherein that would be your next big growth, which comes from, you throwing people at a problem or throwing money at a problem not necessarily gives you a solution. So examples are, some of the things you can throw money and get it, like at PSG or at Man City up to some extent, or throwing people and can get you up to some extent. But if you don't have a structural thing wherein you actually put in the capex of initially doing from the scratch what you want to achieve, until you do that, you not necessarily think you might be have the biggest population, but at the same time, your problems are also much bigger and larger scale. So you have to find your own niches in growth in a highly competitive world, see where it fits in terms of the overall scheme of things, and then try to develop it to the next growth. So sticking to one model simply does not solve. Example, Japan did it, China did it, let's go for export, does not work in this demand-sulking economies across the globe. We'll build a strong domestic thing with the combination of export in terms of some of the things where import substitution can be done, you do that. Combination of these two things which are likely to take you to places for a country like us. That's a good sweet spot to look at. Some of the sectors where you can master your things like IT and all, you're already there. But some of them where it's not a labor intensive. Some of the other labor, like textile, you can look at, you can generate job at the same time, you can export your growth also. So it's a win-win situation. So these are some of the things which we have to look. Some of the other sectors where you can't compete with, don't even do that, because end of the day, you get beaten by the other things. So concentrate where your niche is and develop that into a model.
And that's what even Klopp has said about the Liverpool model as well, because they have gone ahead and scouted for different positions, tried to find the best particular fit for their model, and then they have brought them in. Because like he says, you know, anyone can have a good day and perform well. You know, an economy can have a few good years and perform really well, and everybody might think that they are a miracle economy and growth will never stop. Like you said, with Japan and so many other spectacular economies, the growth did stop. So like Klopp says, but you have to be able to perform on a bad day as well. So the productive capabilities have to be there to back each other up. And like you said, for an economy like India, the lesson is that we are huge in terms of population, huge in terms of capability, huge in terms of potential, huge in terms of resources even. But there are so many varied kind of resources that maybe we need to pick the right kind of sectors and areas to push. Would you have any suggestions for sectors that India can push?
No, before getting into the sector suggestion, all I want to say is, even in certain areas where you're good, I mean, you're doing spectacularly well, you can still fail. So look at the analogies like West Indies cricket team. I mean, least did Clive Lloyd know that lifting 1979 World Cup would be the last for such dominating teams which had such wonderful players, wherein that would be the last World Cup they would lift. And or closer home here, I mean, in hockey, 1964 would have been our last gold in hockey, and still we are not even able to...
No, there was 1980 actually, but yeah, point still stands.
Yeah. So, I mean, we have not been able to reach to those level dominating things. So the same goes to even to the sectors where we dominate. And one closer sector we feel, wherein I feel at least, we can make tons load of progression in terms of both productive as well as create employment, and also have a little bit of trade surplus in overall is textile. I mean, I don't know how many of them know that we are the largest producer of cotton in the world, raw cotton. And I mean, guys like Bangladesh and the countries like Vietnam are beating us hands down the last 5 or 6 years in terms of textile export things. So those are the things which not necessarily need those kind of expertise production, which easily can be done here also. I mean, of course, Bangladesh has this advantage of free trade agreement because they fall under the least developed country and all. But those are to side. But still, if you discount the labor cost and this free trade, if we improve our productivity with the introduction of modernization of machineries and least be dependent on these incentives of export and all, try to catch hold of the niche segments in the textile where you can cater to the global, and if you get big orders from big MNC companies wherein you can cater, I mean, you can only grow two leaps and bounds, which I don't see why we can't replicate on a larger scale. The only thing is smaller companies have to become bigger in terms of the overall investments, in terms of the modernization of their companies, and that's how the order comes, and that's what Bangladesh and people are doing. And I don't see why we can't do this. And it's a very labor intensive industry wherein we can replicate this in, I mean, successfully in a diamond shining business. I don't see why we can't do it in textile.
So basically moving up the value chain in terms of textile. Yes. Translating that ability to produce raw cotton to also produce the end product, which we have not been able to because we have sort of not strengthened the capabilities in the right area. So again, it sort of is like coaching a football club and specific skills that you may be lacking at. For example, you might be bad against set pieces, so you have to get better at defending set pieces, or it might be you might want to get better at taking set pieces, or if you want to play a faster game like what Klopp plays, what is called the Gegenpress, a pressing game where everybody is moving forward and back at huge speed, you need players who are fit enough to be able to withstand that kind of workload, which is the same with economic sectors as well. That some of them do well because they have that ability. Some others, like you said, in terms of textile, we have unfortunately fallen a little behind. And some like IT, where we have achieved spectacular success, but people tend to forget that you know, the sector compared to the rest of the economy is not as big. So, you know, it's like fixating on one particular flashy player, maybe who scored a few good goals, to think that they are the ones who will bring overall success to the club, or one sector which will bring success to the economy. That's not how it works, because to win championships...
Well, people forget it's a team sport, so one sector or one player only take you to some extent.
Yeah, and we're not saying that they're not contributing.
Contributing, yes.
But at the same time, it's not that it's just them who are doing this. And that's what the Liverpool team is about. They have spoken so many times, the players themselves have spoken of how they love being part of this team, and they all tackle challenges and issues together and have each other's back. And that probably is a good lesson economic policymakers can take out of Jurgen Klopp and Liverpool, if they are any football fans among the policymakers or people who are writing down the next big strategies. As we try to make India, for example, a $5 trillion economy and all that, it could be worthwhile to take some lessons from a certain storied historical club in the north of England on the side of River Mersey, and that would be Liverpool FC. Because of a globalized economy and a world that we are sitting here in India and being able to celebrate this universal feeling of all the fans around the world who are celebrating this win for Liverpool and all for them. But as we are economic enthusiasts, we could not resist talking about some of the economics lessons that it could take, because we've seen this team from close proximity, we've seen the game from close proximity, and you know, the parallels are uncanny. All right, you can catch us on any of the podcasting platforms that you use. We are also on Spotify now, so look us up on Spotify. You can follow us on Instagram at Economist, that's ECONORMIST. And you can follow us on Twitter at The Economist, that's TheEconomist. You can visit our blog at itsthemarket.wordpress.com. This is all the time we have for you in this special episode. Let us know what your favorite football clubs are and if you've got any economics lessons from those clubs. And we'll maybe talk about a few of them in the next show. In the meantime, this is Tariq signing off along with Ben.
See you guys. Take and care. Stay safe.
And catch you guys in the next episode of Economics Mixed Belt, MIX.